This episode of Before the Train Wreck podcast is brought to you by the Grondike Soap Company. Guys, I use Tactical Soap and God of War Beard Oil every single day. Tactical Soap is a handmade natural product made in the United States of America from ingredients you can actually pronounce, not endocrine disrupting chemicals that are going to lower your testosterone. Both the soap and beard oil is infused with bioidentical pheromones that are designed by a clinical psychologist and pheromone expert to maximize attractiveness to the opposite sex. Go visit coopersoap.com and that will automatically apply 10% off your order. Consider grabbing one of the trifecta packs to save even more. If you are a bearded man and want a majestic beard like yours truly, the God of War Beard Oil is hands down the best beard oil product I've ever used. Gentlemen, this is the most manly handmade soap that we know of. Other soaps are going to get you clean. This one will get you dirty. Again, you're going to want to visit coopersoap.com now and place your order. That's Cooper, C-O-O-P-E-R, soap.com now. All right, what is up, my brothers? We have a very special broadcast for you tonight on Before the Train Wreck number 61. And it's the truth about being a police officer. If you guys haven't noticed in the media the last 3-4 weeks or so, being in policing doesn't seem like that great of a job anymore. And I've said it a few times on social media now that, hey, look, if you're in school and you're thinking about being a cop, I'd recommend you try something else. I'm going to pull in some of the officers that have volunteered to contribute to tonight's streaming. So we've got Mike, Rational Blue, Jesse, and On the Beat. And welcome, gentlemen, by the way. Initially, I was supposed to have Brandon Tatum as my main guest. One of my followers said, you know, get him on. I sent him an email and he said he was totally on board. Let's do it. 3 hours ago, I got an email from, I guess, his booking agent, you know, whoever handles that. And she was just asking how long the stream was for. And I said 90 minutes and didn't hear anything back. So I'm going to hold a spot open in case he shows up and he's just running late. But there's probably going to be a few more that will be piling in to contribute as well. So, gentlemen, how you guys all doing tonight?
Good. Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Good. Thanks for the invite, Rich.
And you guys are all currently working as police officers. None of you are retired. It sounds like somewhere between 8 and 20 years in the forces.
That's right. Correct. I got
Just real quick, because we're probably going to talk over each other a little bit if we're not careful. But just real quick, I'll just go around. Just mention how long you've been a police officer for, and in what province or state. So don't mention the city, but just mention the province or state. So Mike,
I've been on for 12 years in the province of Ontario.
Okay, and Rational Blue. Oh, you're muted, brother. And you're muted again. Just hit the button once. I think you're double tapping it. See, cops are used to double tapping the trigger, right? When they got to get the job. Okay, we'll skip Rational Blue. Jesse, where do you work as a police officer and for how long?
Alabama. I've been in the game for 15 years.
Okay, and On the Beat?
I work in California for 8 years now.
Okay, and Rational Blue, I don't know if you can unmute yourself. We were chatting before we went live. See if you can champion that for me. All right, I'll let you. Oh, there we go. Oh, we're having problems. We're having some technical difficulties. That's okay. We'll work around it. So let me ask you guys roundtable real quick. So if you had a son that was of the age where he could qualify to apply to be a police officer, would you recommend that he would do the same job that you've been doing for the last whatever 8 to 20 years of your life?
Absolutely not. I tell him to go to the army.
Okay, so that's an absolutely not. So you're vehemently opposed to encouraging your son to be a police officer. And why would you tell him to go to the army? And why would you discourage him from being a police officer?
Well, for up front, the opportunities in the army are so much more than anything I've accomplished in law enforcement. Even with me being in the National Guard, I've accomplished way more shit there than I have on the force.
Okay.
And the pay is fucking terrible. Like down here in Alabama, the average pay is like $12 an hour, like starting out.
Wait, so they start you out at $12 an hour as an entry level police officer?
Yes, most agencies will.
Okay,
Mike, you've got a son. He's of age. He can apply to the police force. Would you recommend that he would do something like that, or would you tell him to find something else to do?
Not a chance. I'd tell him to become a police officer.
And why? Why?
Why? You know what? There's a few reasons. One, I would just say, you know what? You really don't have too much control over your career. It can be policing, honestly, it can be the best time ever until it's not. Every cop kind of says the same thing. You know what? You can have the best shift ever. You go home, you come back to the next shift, and there's your internal affairs or professional standards waiting to arrest you. Or they didn't even know that happened after you left the scene. There's a lot of that that's happening. You know what? Services right now, whichever way the wind is blowing, their first priority is the protection of their reputation. And they will hang you to dry if they have to. So there's that.
Protection of the reputation of the department of
The reputation of the department, right? So if they think that, hey, you know what, if people are going to be outraged if we don't charge you, even though they know you did not do it, you're still going to get charged. You're still going to get brought through the court system. And then it's just more outrage when you get found not guilty.
So there's got to be a fall guy.
There's always a fall guy, and it always falls with that frontline officer. The other thing is, it's almost like it doesn't matter what we do, especially in Canada where I'm from, where you know what, you're arresting people, and even before you've done the paperwork, they're back out on the streets. So it's like, what am I doing here? Yeah. Do you
feel like you're actually putting a little dent in the universe, or do you feel like this is like spinning your wheels, like masturbation sort of thing?
It feels like I'm playing Pac-Man. And I just keep gobbling the ghosts, and they're right back out.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to go back over to, did we get you on the beat as far as would you encourage a son that's of age to become a police officer?
Absolutely would not.
And why not?
It's just not worth it. I mean, we get paid a little bit better here in California. Mm-hmm. I make six figures. It's definitely like a good living.
What's the starting wage in the state of California?
Kind of depends on where you work. At my particular department, it's probably around $35-40 an hour.
Okay.
You're probably making about $80,000 a year, $75-80,000 a year.
Okay.
And then it goes up from there.
Okay.
But I mean, it's a good living, but like they said, it's a good living until it's not, you know. It's a fun job, but I wouldn't recommend it to anybody, even if they weren't my son right now. It's just not worth it. You know, we're at the point now where everybody's focused on feelings over facts. And it doesn't matter what you do or how justified it might be. If mob rule comes in and they say, you know, we need that officer fired, well, guess what? You're going to be the fall guy to kind of save face for the department and the city. So, and I mean, it's not worth it. I would tell them to do pretty much anything else. Go to college, go learn a trade, go to the military, do whatever you want. Just don't do law enforcement.
Got it. You know? Rational Blue, did you get your audio fixed?
Yeah, can you hear me now?
Yeah, there you go. Okay, so I'm guessing that you're in the state of Texas. How long have you been a police officer for?
Yeah, I am in Texas. I've been an officer for 12 years now.
Okay. And let's say you got a son, he's of age. You could encourage him to become a police officer. Would you discourage him? Would you encourage him, and why?
I would tell him, based on his motion, to do it. If he wanted to do it, I'm not going to stop him from doing something he feels like he's called to do. But I would also tell him that he has to be strong, thick-skinned rather, because if he's not, you're going to lose your motivation. The first time, I mean, your first running with IED will show you what you're made of, especially when you're not wrong. And it's like the other officers have said, they're looking for a fall guy, and they say shit rolls downhill, and guess who's at the bottom of the hill? It's going to be you. So I'd have to tell him to prepare himself emotionally and mentally to deal with it, getting in trouble when he hasn't done anything wrong. It's all about public perception right now.
I'm going to get you, I'm just going to remove you from the stream, leave it in the waiting area, and then try to rejoin and see if the connection improves, because your audio is like really, really sketchy right now. So I'm just going to pull you out, see if you can try that for me. Thanks. Damn, you found me. How you doing, brother? You're muted still.
What's up, guys?
How's it going? How you doing, man? Good. So welcome. You joined a little bit late, but so where, like, you're still a police officer, you're retired. You don't have to tell us where you're at. Just tell us what state and or province and how long you've been a police officer for.
So I'm with the federal government, and okay. I've been in there for 12 years.
Okay.
I started in New York. Now I'm in San Diego.
Got it.
Took a little promotion out here.
Okay.
Yeah, still on, and I'm seeing the decline.
Okay. So you're just enjoying the decline, is what you're saying then?
That's what I'm seeing right now.
You've got a son. He's of age. He wants to become a police officer. Do you encourage him? Do you discourage him? And why?
I think just like what Rational Blue said, if that's his calling, his passion, I'll support him. I'll let him know the download. Like, look, you're going to expect this. This is going to happen. But if that's something that he's considering, I'd probably tell him, you know what? Go read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Figure that out first. See what you want to do. Try it. If you're looking for money, that's not the way to go. But if it's something that you want to serve your country and so forth, that could be an option, or join the military.
I think
the cons outweigh the pros at this point.
Yeah. I mean, I was starting to get that vibe a few weeks ago when I was really paying attention to what was getting pumped out in the media. I want to play this little clip for you guys. Some of you have probably seen it, yeah?
I think so.
Yeah. All right. So it's not long. It's only 2 minutes. But just to give you an idea of what cops have to put up with, let's just play this real quick. So the audio is not so hot. So, do me a favor. I mean, you guys are cops. What's all happening here? It looks like a roadside pullover, and he's having him walk a line. Is this because he's drunk or DUI? Like, what does this look like?
Yeah,
it looks like a DUI evaluation.
Okay, so they're just making sure this guy's, you know, on the straight and narrow. Come over here. You obviously can't walk a straight line, so they're going to cuff him. Behind your back. Hey, place your hands.
Yeah, it's happening a lot now.
So now he's getting tased, right?
I got him. Keep the taser on. Stop resisting! Fuck. Keep the taser on. Get on your back! Get on your back! All right.
Is that excessive force?
I'm gonna say no. I'm gonna say no. I mean, you saw the gun fall off of the guy.
Yeah, and you know, they tase him and he's still fighting them, right?
His taser's still on. He probably hit him like 3 times with taser.
Yeah, okay.
Unfortunately, this day and time, there's no amount of force that's ever going to be justified.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the optics are going to make it look like excessive force, though.
Right. So now he breaks free, and then he goes and gets a gun out of his car.
A second gun.
And now he's unloading the clip through the back window.
That was his chance to drive off.
And it's like, all right, see ya. I'm out. It looks like the trailer tried to cut him off, but done. Like, that's, I mean, how often does that happen?
More not often than you think, yeah.
A lot more often than you think. It doesn't always happen in like a shootout or something, but I mean, you know, you gotta wrestle and get down like almost on a daily or at least a weekly basis with somebody these days.
Like, yeah. I watch that video and I think to myself, you cannot pay me enough money to do what these guys are doing to deal with that happy horse shit. Like, you leave your house, your family, perhaps. I mean, you put on a vest, you obviously have training, and but even in that instance, I mean, if the media wanted to twist that around or slice it and dice it, they could turn around like, well, you know, they beat it, you know, they beat up this black man and, you know, poor him, but they're taking bullets from this guy, right? And he's clear, like, there's something wrong with him. I don't see the point in being a police officer in today's day and age, not just dealing with that kind of stuff, but the way that the general mainstream media portrays policing and your approach to the general public. I had some questions here. What does the mainstream media get wrong in general, in your opinion? Like, you know, we can just go around. So we'll start with Mike.
In my opinion, they want the story, and they want the story as fast as possible. And so they will let speculation and rumor run wild. They're not too interested in the facts, and often legal requirements of police service don't allow us to put up those facts as fast as we want it, or as fast as we want to get it out. And then the rumor becomes the truth. And they're all about sort of glorifying that sort of mainstream narrative right now of racist cops, of police brutality. Mm-hmm. So that's where I think they are right now.
Jesse, so the question again is, what does the media get wrong about policing, or you guys, you know, specifically?
I think that they try to sell a much more savage picture than it really is. I mean, like, when you take that scenario, there's nothing pretty about that. And when it comes down to, you know, you dying on the side of the road versus going home, you kind of got to do what you got to do. I mean, the haymakers, for example, if somebody drove by and seen that, they're gonna be like, holy fuck, they're beating the shit out of that dude. Mm-hmm. But they don't, you know, they don't know that he just put three rounds in their gut.
Yeah. obviously, I mean, there was probably some people driving by with their cell phones up, you know, capturing the beating that the guy took on the ground with the taser, but you know, they miss parts of it. So parts of the story are definitely missing. On the beat. So what do you find typically the media or the mainstream media gets wrong about policing?
I think they get almost all of it wrong, to be quite honest.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything they get right then? Or is it like, oh, there's another media story with my department, this is not going to be good?
Yeah, actually, we're going through that right now. There is a media story with where I work. And before even any of the fact, before we can even investigate it, the media is already painting the whole picture. Mm-hmm. They're basically telling us things we didn't know about our own investigation. That somehow they figured out. And
is it manufactured or is it truthful, like actual?
Manufactured.
Mostly, yeah. Interesting.
A lot of it is. It's I'm not going to discuss it too much, but it's an interesting situation, and they kind of ran with it, and, you know, just kind of manufacture, make up their own stuff to fit their narrative and go along with what's happening today.
Yeah.
And, you know, but I think the people with the loudest voices know the least about police work. You know, I mean, we all want to train all the cop, like, I'd say almost every cop out there is out there to do good. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you're going to have bad people. You know, you can go to McDonald's and have the guy that's going to spit in your food or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That just doesn't get as much publicity as, you know, police work these days.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I feel like a lot of people don't really know what goes on in their communities. You know, a lot of people go home, enjoy their family, hang out, enjoy their evening, wake up, go back to work, and they don't know what's going on next door, two doors down, or on the block over.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're completely oblivious to what happens. And, you know, so when this stuff happens, people act like cops just go out there and look for this confrontation. You know, and that's just not the case.
Yeah, I got this guy that used to, I got this guy that used to work for me, and his wife was a cop. She was a detective, and he was, you know, I asked him one time, I'm like, you know, what's it like being married to a cop? He goes, well, if you can live with the fact that every once in a while she's going to come home with her ass beat because she had to go somewhere that was dangerous, then it's, you know, like, it is what it is. But there's a lot more to the story that I don't think the media talks about and people in general don't understand, because whenever I hear somebody say that they want to be a cop or they want to get into policing, it's because secure job, pension, good benefits, you know, retirement, blah, 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 and all that sort of stuff, you know, and you get you know, shift hours, so you get lots of openings in your schedule. I know a couple of guys that are in policing or they're firefighters, and they use their spare time to do contracting work, so they make spare money on the side, sort of thing. But it just, I don't know, man. Like, the more that I hear about it, and now talking to you guys, it really seems like the juice isn't worth the squeeze on a long term basis. Damn, you found me. I'm just gonna call you Damn. So you work for the feds. What do you see at the federal level that the media gets wrong about your style of policing?
It's the same. It's whatever fits the narrative. like, everybody's going to be Monday morning quarterback in the whatever happens in police videos or even on our side.
Yeah.
So everybody gets the, you know, they show up to the scene when it's done, and then they're writing the report like it happened to them. They're never taking account into the officer's standpoint or the officer's view or what happened. You know, you can have those facts. It's just, it'll never make it to the street. It'll never make it to life.
Hmm. Rational Blue, how's your audio, man? You got a decent connection.
Finally got it fixed.
You good. So, all right.
Yeah.
So police officer in Texas. So what do you see in Texas that the media, you know, gets wrong on a consistent basis?
What I would say is the motivation of the officer, like why officers behave the way they do.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times you'll see something happen and automatically you'll say, well, why did he have to be so aggressive? What they don't understand is we don't know who we're dealing with. We don't know the motivation of the person. So if we meet a guy and he's walking up on our car, he could be walking up just to say, hey, thank you for what you do. Hey, I'm lost. Can you direct me to where I need to go? Or you could have a situation like in New York a few years ago, he walks up to shoot you and your partner in the head and walk off. So it's like there is no uniform for a criminal. You know, you don't know who's the bad guy. You don't know who's the good guy. So we have to act with a little bit of apprehension, because if we don't, you could easily not go home. And a lot of people don't understand the gravity of that, saying goodbye, that it could be the last time, you know. And that's what we deal with. As any officer, you deal with, like, you get shot on a traffic stop, or you get shot on an accident, or you get shot on a loud music call. Like, you don't ever know when it's going to be. You don't know when your time is going to be. So you have to try your best to make yourself hard to kill, you know. And it's unfortunate that nowadays, especially when you have people openly saying they want to kill police officers, if an officer went out there and openly said he wanted to kill people, he would be drugged, like, as he should be, if he's saying he openly wants to kill somebody with no motivation. However, civilians can run around here and say whatever they want, and there is no accountability, there's no responsibility. They're not held responsible for what they say.
What do you guys think in general about, see, this is such a weird time for me. I mean, I live in Canada, right? So I've spent a lot of time in the States. I've never lived there, obviously. And I mean, I was in California when the Rodney King thing happened. I was visiting a friend. We were watching the whole shit on TV. And I've seen a whole bunch of other instances. I mean, I've driven to and from Florida many, many times, and I've seen shit on the side of the highway, you know, like here and there. But I mean, it seems like we're at the state, like somebody dropped a super chat here. Actually, let me just pull it up, because this is kind of relevant. Danny said, they don't need to worry about defunding the police. No one's going to be fired up to join the police from here on in. God bless you, man, by the way. Yeah, you know, like I said earlier, nobody could pay me enough money to do what you guys do. But there's this notion that they want to defund police, or they want to disband, you know, police departments. They're also talking about taking away, you know, people's guns as a Second Amendment right. I mean, what do you guys think of all that? Like, it just sounds insane to me.
You know, I think defunding was coming no matter what. And that's just purely economics. And I think this is a great way for politicians to get some more votes by saying, hey, you know what, we're appeasing a certain group of people. We're doing defunding because of this. And they're just completely ignoring all the economic reasons as to why it would happen anyways.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I would say, as far as my thoughts on defunding, it's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. They talk about, like you said just now, they want to get rid of people's guns and then they want to defund the police. So who's going to be the people with guns? The criminals, you know? And if the criminals have guns and you don't, guess who's going to win every time, you know? To speak further on defunding, the biggest thing we need is, they say, training, right? So if training is the biggest thing we need, training costs money. Here in Texas, we have an individual that's teaching, like, he teaches self-defense and Brazilian jiu-jitsu and all these different things. He has gone and said, you know, I will train you officers for free. so that you, because the thing people don't realize is the better trained you are, the less likely you are to use force. But it costs money. Everybody's not going to give away their training for free. Like, fortunately, here in Texas, the overall consensus on law enforcement here, as far as Texas as a whole, is they love their police officers. You know, even like state trooper, like when you see a Texas state trooper, if it's behind you, it's scary. Even for a cop, for a regular cop, you see a state trooper. But you know why that is? Because the state troopers are one of the best trained groups of law enforcement out there. And that costs money. So if you defund the police, all you're going to do is get people that's the bottom of the barrel to come out and say, I want to be police, you know, and then they're not going to be doing anything right. They're going to end up shooting people, killing people because they don't know what they're doing. So you can't defund the train.
I always find it's interesting when you see these like clips, and it's what I see the most of on Twitter now. It's like, you know, this clip, there was one the other week with this bunch of these brats, you know, these like rioters who were throwing things at this guy's vehicle, and he turned his vehicle around and he had some Freddy Krueger knife hand thing or something like that. And you hear everybody in the crowd screaming, call the police, call the police. And it's like, these are the same people that want to defund the police. It's like, I don't understand like the sequence of thinking that they use to arrive at that position of defund, but let's call them when we need them.
Well, look, what do you guys think of that? Look at New York City. They just got rid of all the plainclothes units there, and homicides just went through the roof.
Right? Shootings went through. They got rid of the entire plainclothes units in New York City?
All of the plainclothes units. Wow. They just got rid of them. And homicides, shootings, robberies, everything just straight through the roof as soon as that happened.
I used to get all my leads from those guys. Now they're not there anymore.
All of our intelligence that comes in from a lot of these plainclothes units, it's just completely shut off.
Well, that's the other problem that you guys would have to deal with as well, is if, and I'm just going to mute you because getting some background noise from some, thank you. You know, if you're a police officer and you need backup, right, you're going to call it in. But if there's less units because the department's defunded or it has, you know, fewer officers or fewer resources or fewer cars or whatever, the response time is going to go down, right?
100%.
Not the other way. It'll go up.
So the response time would go up.
Yeah.
It's going to take longer because you have less officers.
That's what I meant. Yeah. So it would take longer for support to arrive, which means that puts your life in greater danger.
No, right. Let me tell you the truth about that.
Okay.
If I know my cover is nowhere near me, I'm going to be less likely to even interact with the person. You know, because at the end of the day, the hierarchy is the, you know, you take care of yourself, your partner, the citizen, the criminal comes further down. I can't take care of that citizen if I'm dead. And I don't want to create a response. I don't want to be out here trying to be, because they say all the hero cops are dead. That's just a thing amongst police. And, you know, they tell you don't go out there trying to be a hero because you'll end up dead. Yeah. So if you have less officers with less cover, you're going to have less proactive policing. It's just, I mean, especially in a place like New York, where they're actively attacking officers, you know, I'm not going to go in there and deal with these people by myself. Why would I do that? That's dumb. Mm.
Yeah, he's exactly right. Me and a partner of mine had a discussion about that one day. Bravery is rescuing a baby from a building that's on fire, right? Mm-hmm. Stupidity is running up in a trap house by yourself to serve warrants. You know, one's going to get you fucked up. And one's gonna, you know, be looked on a little better.
Yeah, work. You think the public's brainwashed at this stage?
Oh, yes. 100%.
Yes.
Yep.
110%.
Yes. Totally. Because what child, if you're talking to a child and one parent is telling you, hey, you can have all the candy you want, and the other parents tell you you're gonna get sick, I'm not gonna give you the candy, which parent are you gonna like?
Yeah. Who's
this goes back.
Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, you know, this goes back to the media not telling the full story. You know, the media is not showing the three times this past year that I talked someone off of a balcony and not to jump.
Right? Yeah, right.
It's not talking about the three times this last month I did CPR on someone. Right? It's not showing the time that I was first on scene to an industrial accident and I'm trying to pack this guy's wound who's bleeding to death and I'm doing the job of the paramedics and the firefighters until they arrive. They're not showing that I gotta go now tell this guy's father, hey, I'm really sorry your son just died, right? There's this whole other side of policing that's not Cops, a TV show, that the media is not portraying. I'd say the reality of policing is, and I, you can ask the other guests here, but the reality of policing is nothing like what we thought it was before we joined. You think policing is going to be one thing, you join, and it's an entire different show.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because I mean, there's a perception versus reality, and I know a lot of you guys follow me already, and you're well versed on the red pill and female nature, and you know a lot of the risks that I talk about. But I wanted to really focus this on why men should consider doing something else if they're looking at policing. Your expectation of being okay, so me as a listener, you know, as an outsider, you know, I hear good job, good, you know, stability, you're never going to get laid off, you get good medical benefits, you get lots of time off when you need it. You know, I hear all of these things, but what's the reality of being a cop? Like, does any of that show up, or does it kind of like get forgotten after the first week on the job, or what does that look like for you guys?
Well, I can say I have seen way more naked, sweaty men than I ever thought I would see. You know, anybody else sees a naked man walking down the street, they're like, okay, we're not going to talk to that guy. And the cop is like, well, I guess I gotta go see what he's talking about. And so that's
are we talking about the public here, or are we talking about the locker room, like when you're back changing?
Probably both. The locker room too. But yeah, just to say, you know, it is here, at least here in Texas, I can say it is a stable job. Like I said, Texas has a unique situation where while you might see the riots and you might see that, the people who matter, like all people matter at the same time, but the people who are making calls or making the decisions, they really back their officers. So just recently here in Texas, a lot of the officers have gotten a raise that made us competitive, you know, statewide. So that part of it is good. And in my department in particular, it's one of the larger departments. So therefore, you do have that upward mobility. You know, you can still move around and do different things. You can do all kinds of different jobs that you might have not thought that you could have done in law enforcement, or you might not thought that they were a part of law enforcement. So that aspect of the job is good.
Okay. Yeah, you know, when I first joined, I always asked cops, why'd you become a cop? And the answers always used to be, you know, I became a cop because I wanted to help people, or I became a cop because, you know, I want to take bad people off the street. Those were always sort of the answers. Lately, that's shifted. There's a lot of cops who are joining later on in life. And when I ask them that question, say, oh, well, you know, my other job didn't have a pension. And I kind of just laugh because I'm like, well, our pension's not going to be there anyways when we retire. But that's a different story. But it's always like, oh, you know what? It's a stable job. There's great benefits. And at no point do they talk about all those sort of inherent reasons why you would want to become a cop, like to serve the community, to serve the public, to help people. And you know what? And you can ask the other guests here, but every time I ask a cop, like, hey, what's your favorite memory of being a police officer? Very rarely is it, I arrested somebody. Unless you're working in a unit like homicide or guns and gangs, where you worked a big case and then you went and you arrested this person who's a violent person, you took them off the street. Most often your favorite memories is, you know what? It was that time I pulled that kid out of the burning car. You know, it was a time I was doing CPR on a baby as he rushed to the hospital because there's no time to wait for an ambulance. Those are the stories that are really cops' favorite moments. And you see a lot of these new coppers are coming on that joined because I know it's a stable job. They're not racing to be first on scene for these type of calls, right? They're always there after the fact. And so I think there's this fear of recruiting people that really want to be a police officers, and they're trying to move and shift to hiring people that are coming to policing as like an afterthought. And I don't know why that is, but that's kind of just the reality of it.
Well, here in particular, we have this thing now, well, it's been developed. I heard it when I first started, no contact, no complaint, right? That was whispered. It wasn't the biggest thing, but nowadays it is. Hey, I can't get in trouble if I don't contact anybody. I'm not going to go, hey, that dude just walked around the building. Looks like he might be doing something shady. Well, if I don't contact him, I'm not going to get in trouble. And nowadays it's, if I don't contact him and I get in a fight, if I don't get in a fight with him, that means that I can't have to use deadly force against him because he used deadly force against me first. Well, I never thought in my career that I would ever see a time where an officer was actively attacked and everybody is deciding that he did not have the right to defend himself or his partner. And that's where we are now. So a lot of these people, these departments do want to hire people that's going to sit back and let stuff happen. Like, oh, it's going to be safe because, once again, the department is going to be concerned about itself. It's not going to be concerned about you. It's not even really concerned about the citizen. It's concerned about funding and the people who are in power are concerned about votes. So that's how they make the decisions on hiring.
So it's very political is what you're saying.
Yeah, it's definitely political. It's definitely political.
Do you guys find that universally? Like every cop on the panel, you find it's a very political job?
Yep.
It's all politics.
It can be, yeah.
I've found... Do what?
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I've found that, believe it or not, our sheriff's offices over here are not as dictated by the public as like the cities that I've worked at, because, you know, the sheriff's usually a career law enforcement officer, so he knows what's what. Mm-hmm. But the chiefs have to work for somebody that's never been in law enforcement. And I know the mayor that worked for the city I used to work at used to give him shit all the time over everything.
Yeah, that's true.
I think it depends on where you work, too. I worked for a couple different departments, and it kind of varies. The first one I worked for was incredibly political. Like, politics even dictated what you could say to people. Like, it was ridiculous. But the department I work for now is much less political, and they kind of give you the tools that you need to go out there and do a good job.
Are you deemed, as a police officer, if you're ever questioned, is it like guilty until proven innocent? Is it like a DV case for a man and woman when you go to the house? It's like pretty much always the guy gets screwed over.
No, I kind of try to take it as a neutral and like, uh-huh. but DV for me is the only crime that I tell people, hey, it's going to help you to tell me more stuff than to just sit there and go, I plead the fifth. Because I'm trying to unravel a ball of nonsense to figure out who started the fight. And if you just sit there and tell me nothing, then, you know, I got nothing to go on.
Yeah, DVs over here, somebody's going to jail. That's what it says. It says shall arrest in Texas. So I actually try to, I mean, I'm sure a lot of officers here also try to hear the story. But I do notice that more often than not, the man's going to go to jail, especially if you look at the damage caused. A woman can jump on a man and, I mean, she can go off on him. If she's just using her hands, he's not going to be as damaged as if he goes and he punches her one time, you know, that's catastrophic. So if you're just using injuries as your metric of who you're going to arrest, usually the man's going to go to jail.
Yeah. So, but for a police officer in general, like if you're being accused of something, is it kind of like a DV where it's like, you know, you're kind of screwed, like you're always guilty until proven innocent? Like, I know there's cameras on everything. You guys have cameras in the cars. A lot of police officers have body cams now. Like, is there a...
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, especially in the eyes of the...
100%.
Especially in the eyes of the public. I mean, yeah. we're wrong no matter what. And even when they're shown video, they just don't want to see it.
Okay. Let me just grab this.
Even within the department, you know, people will come in and complain, and then they're like, you know, your supervisor will bring you in, and it's like, okay, well, what did you do? Tell me what happened.
When you say supervisor, you know, I think of Karen walking in the front door right away asking to speak to the supervisor. Is that what it's like?
No, it is. It is. It really is. It really is. You have people come into the lobby or call in, you know, I want to talk to the supervisor. Uh-huh. And, you know, your sergeant or whoever that happens to be fields a complaint. And then, you know, you get pulled in the office and it's kind of like, you know, you're guilty until you explain yourself. And even then, they don't even really take what you have to say as like being honest anymore. They watch your camera footage and everything. And that's kind of like the final decision. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people will come in, and I've had people that weren't even on scene call in and complain. They had no involvement in it, weren't there to witness it. We'll call in and complain and make up all these allegations that supposedly happened, that supposedly me or the other officers did. And it's wild. You would not believe the amount of complaints and like crazy false complaints that, you know, the departments field, which is kind of concerning considering they're considering getting rid of the qualified immunity thing. Pretty soon, as a cop, you're just going to be drowning in civil lawsuits.
Yeah.
Until you're just going to be done. Like, the only way to get out of it is just going to be to quit. Because if you do your job and somebody thinks you did it wrong, they're just going to sue you, and then the burden's on you to prove that you didn't do anything wrong.
Do you have any kind of personal indemnity when you're working as a police officer, or can somebody personally sue you?
That's what the qualified immunity keeps from happening. If you're acting under color of law.
So they're talking about taking that away so that you can be personally liable. So they could sue you personally for doing your job, take your house, place a lien against your property.
They still kind of can, but you have like a police officers association or another group. So they'll represent you like legally and everything. And they're more suing the city and the department,
right?
But you're kind of named in it. But it's not like your assets or anything that are getting tied up with it. You know what I'm saying?
Not at this time, though. But you're saying that they're talking about changing that so that you can have personal liability.
Yeah.
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 Wow.
Because right now,
and it's like I said, with the amount of fake complaints. I mean, not all complaints are fake. Absolutely, people do dumb stuff out there. Mm-hmm. Like, don't get me wrong. But people do like to just make up things to like kind of feed their victim mentality. It seems like. And
well, everybody's a victim today, right? I mean, this is what we're breeding.
Oh yeah. Yeah, of course. But now it's going to come down to like, okay, well, I don't like what the officer did. I'm just going to sue him and see if I can get money. But now it's you personally on the hook and you have to go through all this stuff and the burden's on you to show that you didn't do it, you know?
Yeah. If I could add on. Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say 2 points to that was, for example, of a crazy complaint. You know, I've had officers who have been accused of robbery and they have video that shows that they never even talked to the person. The person was there on the side, and the video shows that I never made contact. I've never made contact with that person. You watch the video, the person standing on the side, and then when you finally go and they actually sit the person down and ask them, hey, man, why did you say that that officer did that? Oh, man, I know the city got money. Literally, that's what the city got money. So to go back to the qualified immunity, if you're acting under color of law right now, if you're doing your job, you're not violating any laws and you're not violating any policies, they cannot detach you. You have the veil of the city to protect you. What they're talking about doing is, even if you are acting under color of law, even if you are doing what the city policy says, for instance, you have to take someone to the ground. If they get injured by you taking them to the ground, even though you're making a lawful arrest, they can still say, I'm going to sue you for my injuries. And there's no way for you to defend yourself except getting a lawyer. And a lot of times people just sue just to see what they can get because there's no penalty for suing unjustly.
Is that something that happens in Canada too, Mike?
Oh, yeah. I'm involved in 2 lawsuits right now, actually.
Really?
Yep. One of them was a completely justified arrest that happened with a drunk male. Lots of bystanders, lots of witnesses. He's just suing for the sake of it. We even have the video from the establishment, and nobody seems to care. He's just going to try and get whatever money he can get. So, but to add on to the erroneous complaints, a lot of people use the police as a tool in their own personal lives, right? So it's like, hey, I don't like the neighbor. I'm just going to call the police on them. Mm-hmm. Hey, you know what? My baby daddy's pissing me off. I'm going to call the police on him. And then we show up, and then we can only act with what the law allows us to do. Mm-hmm. And when they don't get the answer that they like, here comes the complaint. They start calling the supervisor. Hey, why didn't the officer do this? I mean, so they're constantly trying to manipulate the system for their own benefit.
Is that a conversation you have with your supervisor? Is there a lot of paperwork? Is there a lot of like, you know, watching videos? Like, what's all involved with that?
You know what? When the complaint comes in, where I work is you've got your complaint response form that you fill out. They're going to get the video. They're going to look at all your notes that you made. They're going to take a statement from them. They're going to do the investigation. They're going to start calling witnesses. They're probably going to knock on doors to try and locate witnesses. It can be a lengthy process, or it could also be really quick if you've got that video.
Is there consequences to a citizen for tying up police resources for the whole Karenitis? No. Let me talk to the supervisor bullshit.
No, so there is. Not at all.
I put him in jail for that, Rich.
Not here. So, not here. There isn't.
There
Hang
is.
On. Hang no. on. Somebody said that they go to jail. So where is that?
Yeah, that's Alabama. It falls under the, there's a code for rendering false alarm. For like yelling a fire in a crowded movie theater. And then there's one for the police response. I put a girl in jail for that a couple of weeks ago, and she was cracked out on meth and called an ambulance like 9 times that day.
Uh-huh.
And by the time it was all said and done, she had 2 assault charges, an escape charge, resisting arrest.
Okay, so it's a state by state thing then, but it sounds like most of you guys no consequences, you know, for the most part.
So in Canada,
department by department.
Yeah, in Canada, there's a crime called public mischief, and that's if you call and make a false report. The thing is, the police never lay that charge because they don't want to discourage people from coming forward with complaints.
Oh, I see.
So that's what they're doing there. And the other thing about complaints is a lot of people try to bait us into an interaction that can then result in a false arrest or something like that, trying to look for that lawsuit later on. So we're always constantly about being baited into interactions. Like people come up to us out of nowhere, just start swearing at us, throw rocks at our cars as we're driving along. And then they got a buddy in the bushes recording.
Okay.
Yeah, that's happened here. That happened recently here. Very recently that happened here.
Uh-huh. Okay. I'm going to grab the super chat. Can you guys just think for a minute how much, what percentage of your time you actually spend dealing with erroneous paperwork, as you go about your job, you kind of want to do your job. You don't want to get tied up with dealing with Karens or complaints or paperworks and nonsense. I'm just curious about that part, but let me just hit the super chat real quick. So Del Vicio, thanks for the generous super chat. Awesome. Tragedy teaches us how to survive emotionally and physically. If we're successful, make it through shooting, death of a partner, divorce, we can pass on what we learned to younger cops so they don't go through what vets went through. Thanks for sharing that. How much of your time as a percentage, gentlemen, do you spend tied up on BS as a police officer?
There's an old saying when I first got in, it was for every 10 minutes of fun, like car chases and stuff like that, you're going to be doing paperwork for an hour.
Wow. Yeah, that's about right. You spend a lot of time doing paperwork and especially it affects your job. Like we have a thing here called the blue team when they were, you know, one of those 8 demands or something that people were talking about was that they were document every form of force. Every time an officer does anything above officer presence, they want it to be documented. And so, for instance, now if you're an officer, you're doing, you know, let's say you're doing something besides a building search or a felony stop. If you pull your weapon, they want you to report just pulling your weapon out. Even if you're not pointing at anybody, you pulled it out so it'll be out and available to you if you needed it. They want that documented. So now it affects you to be like, well, I'm going to keep this holstered because if I, you know, if I pull it out and I don't even need to use it at all, I don't pull it out for my safety. I still got to do a report. And that report takes like, you know, 20 to 30 minutes, depending on what reporting form you're using.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. We work 10-hour shifts, and I'd say like a good probably 70% of that is really report writing and paperwork and miscellaneous trainings that they require us to do every year. Things that really have nothing to do with actually enforcing any laws. And even of the 30% where you're going to calls, I'd say like a pretty good majority of those are completely civil matters or things that have nothing to do with any law actually being broken at all. You know, landlord-tenant disputes, parents that can't discipline their kids. You know, mental health is a big one these days. So it's just, I feel like about probably 5 or 10% of the job is actually dealing with like criminal violations and actually doing investigations and police work and that kind of stuff.
Have any of you been a police officer for more than 15 years?
I'm right at the 15th year, and that's counting like explorer reserve time along with my full time.
So have you seen the job change over the last 15 years, like from year one to where you are today? Like, has it changed much? Has it gotten better? Has it gotten worse? Like, what does it look like?
Oh, it's way different than it used to be. Like when I first started, Facebook wasn't even really there. It was just barely MySpace.
Mm-hmm.
And like camera phones weren't that great. So people wasn't recording everything you did. Mm-hmm. But right around like 2012, 2013, when the camera phones really started getting good quality and Facebook Live started coming out, that's when like the noticeable change in the direction that we are now happened.
How did it change? Like, how did cell phones change policing specifically?
Like, because people will, like, they'll, they, like, when it first happened, people would just stand over to the side while we were dealing with a subject, especially like in the projects or like lower income housing. And they would only record, or they would record the incident and only take about half of it and go down to like the city hall during a council meeting and, you know, claim that we beat the fuck out of an innocent person or, you know, stuff like, or send it to the news. That's a, that's another big one they would do.
Yeah. Cameras are a gift and a curse. They really are. Yeah. I love cameras on the one hand, because if you did something, if they said you did something, you didn't do it, it's right there. But on the other hand, they can selectively show what they want people to see. Yeah. They won't show, like, they'll show the officer, you know, doing balancing placement on this guy and he falls down and hurts himself. But they won't show that the guy just hit the officer in the face before they started recording it.
Yeah. I see this trend now where people, like, I've noticed that kids don't respect teachers as much in school as what they did when I was in school. Now, like, back in the day when I was a kid, if I came home with a shitty report card or I did something wrong in school, I'd, you know, I'd get the back of my head smacked or I'd get the slippers or something like that, and it would be my fault because I was a bad kid. Now today it seems like everything is the teacher's fault and kids can do no wrong. It's like we bubble wrap children today. Is the same sort of thing happening in policing where it's like police are always going, like you always got to cover your back? It almost seems like you're always in the wrong. Like you're walking on eggshells. Do you guys feel like you're walking on eggshells? Like, is that an accurate?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. All the time.
You know what?
Yeah. Everything is CYA.
Yeah. We used to have respect from even the criminals. Like we call them rounders. And when I first got on, these were like career criminals and it was a game of cat and mouse. They knew they were criminals. We knew we were police. It was just our job to arrest them. It was their job to commit the crime. They had tons of respect for us. The new breed of criminals now is you'll arrest them. They run home. They grab their mom. And then they're at the station complaining about their mom. Yes. Right? And it's just like, guy, I just watched you run across a street and hand off a gun. And you're yelling at me saying I'm profiling you. I watched you with the gun.
When you say profiling, what do you mean? Like racially profiling?
Racially profiling.
Yeah.
Okay.
The didn't do culture is ridiculous. It starts when they're kids, like you said, not respecting teachers. I mean, you can have a whole conversation about trying to teach a male to respect a female teacher, which a lot of these dudes, I've said before, they only see females. They don't know how to interact with males. And most officers are males. So they're not used to the authority. Then they have mom since they've been up in school. You know, the teacher says, you know, such and such was talking in class. Well, mama, I wasn't talking. Guess what mama gonna do? No, you're lying on my baby. My baby, my baby. So guess what? When they grow up, they dealing with us. Mama, they said I had drugs in my pocket. Them wasn't my pants. Well, why you have someone else's pants on, first of all? Mm-hmm. Think about that. But then you're gonna go tell your mom, and your mom's gonna make this big deal about it. You know? So it's just accountability at the end of the day.
Mm. The amount of times I've arrested people with drugs in their pockets and then they go, oh, it's not my pants.
Okay.
The brotherhood of the child in pants.
The problem is nobody wants to own whatever they're doing. So even if I have, let's just say my last big one was, he was running kiddie porn. And even though we had all the evidence and so forth, nobody wants to own it. I mean, who wants to own that? But in any other crime or whatever, even if you say, all right, look, this gun belongs to you. No, that's not mine. The drugs. No, that's not mine. Mm. So, I mean, all right, look, I mean, it's somebody's. And obviously it's on you, in possession 9/10 of the law.
Yeah.
Man, I got so many questions going on in my head. I don't even know where to go with this thing now. It's like, so here's a question for you. Like, I see a lot more female police officers today than when I was a kid. And I do, I go to a dojo and I do some boxing. I do some Krav Maga. And I had this one female instructor once say, here, hold this gun. I'm going to show these ladies how to disarm it from a guy. And she's like, hold it firm, you know, resist. So I'm sitting there holding the gun. She was like level 4 or 5 or some shit. And she couldn't get it out of my hand, right? Like, women have something like a third the upper body strength that men do. Is being a police officer, if you're paired up with a female cop, more dangerous?
Depends on what you're doing.
Okay. It depends on her mindset, too.
Like
depends on your partner.
Like that pullover scene over there that you know, that we saw when we started. I'm not going to play it again. I know some people come in late, but you know you can just kind of rewind it to the first 10 minutes. But that pullover scene, there was one big cop and there was one much smaller cop, and like even the smaller cop had a hard time. Like the two of them could not, you know, pin down this guy. I couldn't. Like I wouldn't want to pull that guy over if my partner was a chick. Like is that a danger as a male cop?
I mean, it kind of it really depends. Like, I've actually worked with some female cops that'll straight up get punched in the face and give it right back. And start throwing fists.
That's true.
Okay. And they'll have some that hold their own. Yeah.
They'll get down.
Okay.
They'll jump right in there with you. Now, on the other hand, I've known some female cops that will just kind of like literally dance and tiptoe and moonwalk around you while you're rolling on the ground with somebody and like. Not help or do anything productive.
Yeah. So I think it really,
just run around.
I think it really just depends on mindset and the individual.
Can you?
But I think there is.
Can you guys select your partner, or do they assign you somebody like here? You're stuck with this person for the next 6 months.
We select over here.
Where I work, we can generally select them. But we always ride one person cars at my department. So
one person cars, okay.
But I think you almost have to have like a certain willingness to be violent. And I think a lot of times that's missing from the female mindset. You know, when you're fighting for your life or like that scenario on the side of the road, like you have to be willing to do violent shit.
Yeah.
And I think that's obviously like a little bit more prevalent in the male mindset than, you know, females.
I think that the female, anybody that you ride with, I mean, I'm pretty sure you know people that'll, you got to bring what you got to call out what you can handle. Mm-hmm. I'm a fairly large guy. You know, I'm like 6'3". So, mm-hmm. And I'm, you know, they say speak softly, but carry a big stick. I don't amp up people. But if you got that one person, I'm just going to say person. I'm not going to say female because it's the dudes like that too. They'll start talking cash shit to somebody and they know they're going to look at you to fight them. Like, wait a minute. You bought this ass whooping. Go on and take it. Like, don't put me in this, you know? So if you got a female that's like that, if she can't handle her own, but she'll start a lot of shit, then that becomes a problem, you know?
Okay, so you can run into problems in that sense, huh?
The one thing I would say about that is I've worked with a lot of guys that I wouldn't want to have in my back either. And when you're working on a good platoon or a good shift, you know what everyone's capabilities are. So when you hear that call come over the radio and someone else has that call, you're like, hey, you know what? That's not a bigger cop. That's a female or that's a guy who can't fight. You know what? You kind of all sort of slowly drift towards that area. So if they put over that assist, you're right there to go back them up.
That's true.
My big issue is just say you have a violent person in one of our cells that needs to be extracted. It's always the same police officers that they go to. They'll go grab the two biggest guys on the shift and say, hey, we need you to go pull them out. But now you're always putting me in jeopardy of getting that complaint. You're putting me into a violent situation where you know there's going to be a fight, where I can get injured, I can get sued. But they're never going and grabbing that female and putting them in there. Right? It's always going to be the two biggest guys.
Well, women have always been the protected sex throughout history. I don't think that would change in policing. I mean, yeah, you're going to have hiring quotas, but oh, hang on a sec. There's a big bad guy who's pissed off and drunk and stoned in the cell. So we're going to get Mike because he's 6'4" to go get him. Right. How many of you guys have been injured on the job? Like shot, stabbed, beat badly, like hospitalized, you're all under 15 years.
I actually just got back to duty. I was out for about 3 weeks with a concussion from getting punched.
Who's that, Mike?
Fighting with a guy.
Oh, on the beat? Okay. Concussion?
Yeah, I had a concussion. We had this crazy guy walking down the middle of the road, and we followed him for almost a mile trying to get him out of the street. Did a whole bunch of stuff, right? Quote, unquote, de-escalation.
Yeah.
And eventually it just came to the point where, hey, we got to get out and contact this guy, and my partner grabbed him as I grabbed him, and he got away from my partner in the same instance, turned around and threw like a nice haymaker to the side of my head.
Okay.
So I've been
injured. All right, so that's one out of five. Has anybody else been injured or hospitalized or anything?
All right, I think we've probably all made trips to the hospital at some point in our careers, whether it's sprained ankle, sprained wrists, broken bones. I've been sucker punched myself just out of nowhere walking down the street.
Uniformed? Like walking down the street? Uniform, yeah. Somebody just sucker punched you?
Yeah, just walked up from behind and punched me in the back of the head. And then the fight was on. So
I've got bit twice.
Oh yeah, you've been bit numerous times.
Don't forget that. So you got to go to the hospital for that shit. Get the cocktail.
See, that's not a problem that I've ever had to deal with. Like, I've never, you know, been concerned somebody's gonna just sucker punch me in the back of the head as I'm going to the job during the day or bit. It's just, it's foreign to me, man. It's like, you know, being a cop is just crazy from so many regards. Like, what's the best part about being a cop? Like, let's sugarcoat this. I mean, there's got to be something good. I mean, the car chases, the saving the baby
I always tell this story to new cops, and I always tell them, listen, you became a cop to help people.
Yeah.
When that 911 call comes across, get there as soon as possible. And one of my first memories was, it was a domestic violence call, and the guy cut off his ex-girlfriend's tongue. There's blood all over the place. It was insane. So we kick in the front door, we go inside, and the look on her face when she saw us and knew she was safe, that's a memory that's going to stick with me forever. And I think most cops get that when you're first on scene and you see sort of like the weight of the world off his shoulders because you're here. It's something that you're never going to forget.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I think those cases where you can legitimately like actually help somebody, whether it's a domestic violence, whether kidnapping, whatever it is, mm-hmm. where you can legitimately help somebody and then they take your advice and they better their life and get themselves out of that situation mm-hmm. is honestly like one of the best feelings ever. It doesn't happen that much. But it's just like every time you get one of those cases, it just kind of gives you that renewed energy, you know? Mm-hmm. I've had like interstate kidnappings where we got the guy in custody and recovered the female without her being harmed or anything, like some really big cases. And those are just, it makes all the difference in the world. It's good to know that you actually made a difference, you know, in somebody's life, like have a significant impact.
How do you wish the public would treat you? You know, there's things that the public could do that would make your job better, I would imagine. Like, how do you wish the public would treat you? You know, some sort of behavior, some gesture, something that they're not doing, like to say thank you, or
it's as easy as waving to us as we drive down the street.
Just waving, eh?
Yeah. It's as easy as that.
We don't even expect the gestures or anything, just, you know. It just treat us like anybody else, like a member of your family, you know, or just be respectful. You know, that's what a lot of this comes down to is respect. Like we, despite public opinion, we don't go out there looking for fights. Like police work is, I'd say probably 80% completely reactionary and dependent on whatever the person you're talking to or dealing with is going to do. Like very rarely do you see, you know, cops just don't walk up and start talking to somebody and then punch them first, you know, most of the time. Mm-hmm. Usually they're getting punched first or something else happens. So, I mean, just that respect, just treat police like any other member of your family or whatever. Like 99% of us out there are really good people. We'd be stoked to sit down with you, have a cup of coffee, you know, hang out for a little bit. And it's a long way for both sides.
It's funny you mentioned coffee. People,
I see some people in the chat that have said something along the lines of, yeah, but they need to get rid of the bad cops. Like, are there legitimate bad cops in the forces that you guys work in where you're like, okay, this guy needs to go. Like, when are they going to get rid of him?
Sometimes you can kind of tell, but I mean, I think what people think about bad cops is like what they see in the media.
Right.
And a lot of that stuff, it's like, okay, well, what does a bad cop look like? Mm-hmm. You know,
I think it's like, a moving target. I mean, it's whatever they want to call it that week.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even when you get down to it, it's like, okay, well, what does a bad cop look like? How do you suggest we quote unquote weed them out? Mm-hmm. Like there's no bad cops until there is kind of thing, you know, like until they do something wrong. And then you realize like, okay, this guy's an idiot. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There are some dudes where you're like, dude, this guy's an asshole or like, shouldn't be here. And, you know, you can deal with it. But for the most part, like, I mean, people are good until they're not. And that goes for anybody.
Got it.
You know, I haven't ran into really too many bad cops ever. I've ran into a lot of dumb cops. if that makes sense. And someone earlier, someone earlier mentioned about how, like, you've got that cop that shows up on scene, just amps everything up, right? Like, there's a lot of those guys. But for the most part, every cop I know truly, genuinely just wants to help people. And then the media gets out there, stories start getting warped, and then you've got this bad cop. The entire story is not out there. And don't get me wrong, there are some bad cops that do get discovered. I personally haven't worked with any of them.
Gotcha.
I mean, I've worked for several different agencies, and I can say I've worked with hundreds and met thousands of cops. And for the most part, they're all, you know, almost like your average Joe. They'll sit down, they'll shoot the shit, they'll joke with you, like happy-go-lucky people, you know, for the most part. And you know, that's how most of us are, you know.
Do you guys have any concerns about people in the US owning firearms? Like the US cops? So thumbs up, yes, you want the public to have firearms, like the Second Amendment is something that you support?
Yeah.
Rational and Blue?
Absolutely.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
I get that.
Yeah, go for it.
You know, I get the sense that that makes your job safer, right?
Yeah, a trained person with a gun that's on our side or on the side of what's right. Definitely.
Yeah. What about in Canada, Mike? Like, you know, as a Canadian cop,
you know what,
I own firearms, but they're all in a safe, right? Like, I can't carry, I can't conceal carry, nothing.
Yeah. You know what, Trudeau just, and I don't want to get too much in politics, but Trudeau just banned some like 1,500 guns.
Yeah, I know. I got the letter in the mail from him. He wants a couple of my guns.
Yeah. I just got the letter as well about a week ago. That's not going to solve crime at all. And we've got Bill Blair, who used to be the chief of Toronto Police, who's now the Minister of Public Safety. He knows full well this isn't going to stop gun crime.
Yeah, it's a political move. With
legal guns. It's a purely political move. And when you look at the U.S., you know, gun-owning people are polite people.
They're right?
In the U.S., every place where they have the strictest gun laws, you have the highest amount of gun crime. Right? So,
you look at
Australia. Yeah, and you look at Australia, right? They banned guns, and what happened? You had home invasions go through the roof. You had sexual assaults go through the roof because the criminals knew, hey, everywhere is a gun-free zone. I'm the only one with a gun. You look at the U.K. They banned all the guns. And now they have knife deposit boxes where you can go drop off your knife because there's stabbings galore in the UK. You know, banning guns never drops the homicide rate. It just changes the tool that's used.
Would you feel safer as a police officer if Canadians were, you know, had like a Second Amendment right?
100% I would. Because you know what, if you're going to go through, jump through all the hoops to get a gun license, like you look in Canada, everyone who has a gun license, every single day, there's a background check done on them. Yeah. So if you were involved in a domestic tonight, tomorrow morning, your local police service is going to get a CPIC message from the RCMP saying, hey, go to this guy's house and take all of his guns from him.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. So every day there's a CPIC check done on you, like a background check to make sure that nothing's happened where we now have to remove your guns. You know, there's all these courses that you've got to take. And if you're going to be a law-abiding person, jump through the hoops, take the training. You know what? I trust you, right? I trust people with cars. You know what I mean? Like we can easily turn cars into a 2,000-pound missile.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it happened in Toronto a couple of years ago. I mean, a guy rented a van over a bunch of people, right? I got a super chat here. Let me just hit this real quick. Gila Watson, thanks for that super chat, brother. It says, I think it's the media that's destroying the police. I've never had an ill run-in with a cop, knock on wood. Perhaps that's because both my parents taught me to respect everyone. There are bad apples, but not all of them. I'm 26 and black, by the way. Guys, I'll say straight up, you know, I was talking to these guys before we went live. I've been pulled over by the cops a few times, doing 200-plus kilometers an hour on a motorcycle. You know, driving fast in a car, merging on a highway. Like I like fast shit. So I know that when I do it, I'm breaking the law and I'm prepared to pay the consequences. Quite often it's a conversation or just a slim ticket and you deal with it. But I always show a high level of respect for the person doing their job, pulling me over. Cause that's their fucking job, man. And, as you've heard tonight, it doesn't sound like it's an easy job and I sure as hell would not want to trade places with any of these men on the panel right now. I mean, it's at the point where they don't even want to show their face because it's, you know, because it carries consequences to offer an opinion, right? It's a, it's doesn't seem like a fun job for men to get into today. And as we started the, you know, the panel discussion with, you know, hey, if you had a son that was of age and wanted to become a police officer, for, you know, for the most part, I think it was pretty much unanimous. Most of these guys would say, don't do it, you know, find something else to do. I got one more cop that just entered the waiting area. What's up, K9 guy? Do you have a mic?
I have a mic.
How you doing, man?
Good. How are you doing, brother?
Good. Probably just going to wind down the broadcast. Did you want to add anything to this before we wrap up?
So I do. Good. What I would bring in would just open up.
We lost your audio. It broke up. You still there, K9 guy? That's a negative. Okay, so I'm going to pull you from the feed. There we go. And let's pull Rational Blue back in. So, guys, let's just wind this down. Any closing thoughts for men considering getting into law enforcement? I mean, it doesn't sound like the juice is worth the squeeze, but you guys haven't tendered a resignation. So what advice would you give to men in North America considering this as a job? We'll start with you, Mike.
You know what? It is one of the most rewarding jobs I've ever done. If you are determined to become a police officer, this is your passion. This has been your calling in life. You know what? You got to figure it out for yourself, and you're probably going to do it. But what I would say is, before you join, learn a skill that you can gain employment elsewhere. You know what? Get your plumbing ticket. Become an electrician. Just something that you can fall back on, because a lot of people join and are very disillusioned once they get here. And that would be my advice. You know, we always need good people who are passionate about it to become police officers. It's a reality of life that we're going to have police. And I don't want to live in a city or in a society where we don't have good police officers, honorable people who want to help people, right? Like earlier you're mentioning about just sort of the dangers of the job. Mm. And you know what? That's something that I will do day after day if it means protecting people who need that protection. That's probably just sort of that innate, manly, wanna be the protector provider instinct in me. But I think policing is a very, very honorable job. And it's a shame seeing where it's going. It's a shame seeing a lot of the good police officers leaving that they want to leave. A lot of people aren't joining anymore. But the one thing I would say is, you know what, if this is your passion, this is your calling, join, but you better have a really good backup plan. And so if it turns out that this isn't for you, you can leave right away.
Cool. On the beat.
Yeah, man, Mike pretty much nailed it there. To be quite honest, you just gotta want to do it and want to do it for the right reasons, you know. And you know, I would caution them, know what you're getting into. Go out there and do ride-alongs, like more than one with more than one department, and see how things work and see what it actually is other than just watching it on TV. Mm-hmm. And then that was also one of the biggest pieces of advice that I was always given was have a backup plan. Don't get a college degree in criminal justice or something. Get a college degree in, you know, chemistry or basket weaving or anything other than something related to police work. So If you do get an injury, or you do decide that it's not for you, you have something else to fall back on, like something, another job that you can go to that's not related. Because a lot of people go and they'll get this criminal justice degree and they'll do all this stuff. And it's like, okay, well, you know, what if you get injured or something? What are you going to do with that? You put all your eggs in this basket, essentially. But I mean, we always need good people. Like that's obvious now more than ever.
Damn you. Unmute yourself. Let us know what your closing thoughts are.
I'll go on my short little list here. The pros of policing: you're going to have your brotherhood, your camaraderie, You're going to have lifelong contacts and networks. Mm-hmm. I went to the academy 12 years ago. And I still talk to these people. Mm-hmm. You're going to have that job security. I mean, I guess it's on the federal side. I don't know how it is on the local side with you guys. Cons, you're going to have a lot of politics, especially with your arrest numbers, your brass. Your health is going to go down for sure. You're going to have bodily harm, public safety, sleep apnea, shift work, and all that jazz, injuries. Mm-hmm. Your retirement is going to go to shit, too. I mean, if they're defunding police, you can best bet your pension is going to look like crap later on. Instead, I'd push people to go find something more lucrative. If this is your passion, go for it. I mean, if that's what you really want, go for it. But if this isn't your passion, find something else. Go do real estate or something. Or if you really want to do it, join the military. I mean, I don't see them defunding military anytime soon, which is good. Or look into private security. But other than that, this is where we're at right now.
Is there any, before you go to Rational Blue, is there any opportunities for you guys to move into private work that's potentially better? Like, is anybody in law enforcement, or have you seen a shift with people moving into that?
Yeah,
there's quite a few. Like, if you actually go and get like traffic collision investigation courses, like insurance companies will pay you a lot of money to work for them and dissect police reports or investigate like collisions that people report. Mm-hmm. Like, there's quite a few opportunities out there to go to the private sector if you do the training. Like, a lot of it carries over.
The demand in the private sector for former cops is huge. You have companies like Brinks, anything, mining companies, they're always looking for former police officers to head up their loss prevention departments or their risk management departments.
And is that a better job, generally speaking, or is it just a different job?
You know what? Every time I speak to retired cops, they said that if they knew this is what retirement was like, they would have retired a long time ago. Every time I speak to cops who have left and resigned or have retired, the one thing they always say is that they didn't realize how much stress they were carrying on them on a day-to-day basis. And the first day they woke up not being a cop, they're just like, wow, this is what it feels like not carrying all these worries with you every single day.
Mm. Rational Blue, you're up.
As far as deciding to be a cop, you have to do some soul searching and as why you're into it, because it's a thankless job. And that's fine. Most officers don't do it to be thanked. You know, they do it because they feel like it's something that they're called to do. And if ever you wake up one day and feel like you're just not, it's not there for you anymore, the best thing to do is just to walk away. But it is going to be hard if you don't have something to back you up, because you only know how to do one thing, you know, as an officer. So that's one thing you have to seriously think about: what's happening after you take off the belt and the badge.
Mm-hmm. K-9 guy, I don't know if you got your audio sorted out.
I do. I'm pretty sure you got me.
Yeah, I got you loud and clear. So just closing thoughts, because we're just wrapping up the broadcast. You came in a bit late, but yeah, what advice would you give to guys?
I would go with what everyone, Mike and the other guys, have said: have other backup skills. So my time was with federal, and it was counter-narcotics, counter-terrorism, things like that. But have other backup skills. And the thing that worries me is we're losing all our top, like all the what do you want to call them, ETF, SWAT guys. You know, the riot control, like, they all walked out in Buffalo. They just quit. You know, they all resigned from, people are like, well, they should be fired. I'm like, well, they're SWAT. Like, it's a volunteer role. Mm-hmm. So we're losing a lot of top guys. But a lot of these guys have other skills. Like, they are plumbers or contractors or, you know, I know guys that are accountants. They have other skills, and have a whole bunch of skills in your back pocket. And then when you can, just walk away if you have to.
Gotcha. All right, guys. Let me just take care of this last super chat. First name, last name says, last six times I got pulled over, I had my firearm, never had a problem, got into an accident on my motorcycle. They knew I was drunk and they let me go. I'm black. It's who you are that cops judge, not your skin. Well, it's good to hear that we've had a bunch of guys chime in, from every walk of life, every race. It's like, guys, being a police officer is not an easy job. It's obviously not getting any better for police officers based on what I'm taking in from this broadcast. So it's really got to be like something that you're totally passionate about, because you are going to be judged and criticized, and you are going to be walking around on eggshells if you decide you know, pursue this career. And right now, it just doesn't look good for cops. I mean, the media is very, very hostile to, you know, towards them. And I don't think it's going to get any better anytime soon, especially with this election cycle running up in the States. It just seems like they're looking for bad guys, and, you know, guys in uniform are easy targets. So, gentlemen, I want to thank you for, you know, contributing to tonight's broadcast as a panelist and sharing your experiences and stories. And I know there's, you know, some guys that are watching this tonight that have probably thought about being a cop, and maybe they will, maybe they won't, you know, at the end of this, but, you know, I appreciate you guys with your transparency and all that.
Yeah. Thanks for having us.
Anytime. Thanks for having us, Rich.
All right, gentlemen. So thanks, with that being said, all right. Anytime. So with that being said, let me just quickly shout out to the channel sponsor over here, the Tactical Soap Company. Pinned in the top comment, there's a link if you guys want to grab some. It helps support the creation of this type of content and these broadcasts. It's a pheromone-infused handmade soap. You are showering anyways. Get rid of that crappy endocrine-disrupting stuff with all kinds of junk in it and get something that's all natural. Speaking of which, this Thursday's broadcast, I've got Playing the Wind coming up with Dr. Anthony J. And he's the author of the book, Estrogeneration. The subtitle is How Estrogenics Are Making You Fat, Sick, and Infertile. Really, really eye-opening shit. So tune in on Thursday. Look for that event when I create it. That'll be a really, really good one. Again, gentlemen, thanks for joining. We'll see you guys in the next one. Peace out.